welcome to episode 85 of In The Move Podcast. I'm Callum Reid of UltimateAddict.com.
And I'm Peter Shepherd of InTheMoveForBlog.blog.co.uk. Something else, I'm sure. I've got a dot, stop talking, dot. Oh, what's this? It's a yoghurt. Lovely.
What an intro.
Yeah, number two. The toffee one has been eaten and now I'm attacking the vanilla.
Wait, hold up.
This is completely throwing you.
Attacking the vanilla. That might happen later.
Yeah, it sounds like I'm just having a go at Michael Bay again.
Or Ron Howard.
Yeah.
Okay, it's been a really sad week. But just quickly.
It's been a glorious week. Chelsea beat Man City last night.
Well, yeah. I was going to say it's been a sad week, but it's been a glorious week for our football teams.
Oh, your football team's going great. They're actually winning games.
Exactly. I know.
So, and Jose's just giving you the blueprint on how to win the final.
What, just say you're not going to win the final?
No, just...
Declare yourself out.
No, just before Yaya Toure even turns around, tackle him. So, hello, Mr. Defender, will you give me the ball? Oscar! No, it wasn't even Oscar, it was William. Or Hazard, what are you doing? I'm supposed to be allowed to play. No, you can't, because we rule.
Oh, footballing masterclass again.
Tactical genius.
Okay, is there any other sporting news?
Well, that's the biggest of the week, obviously. Obviously, and then there's the small amount of the Super Bowl.
Yeah. Which
I won't get to watch the highlights of until Thursday. Because that's how busy I am.
But
watching films and doing podcasts and keeping myself fit.
They weren't expected to win, were they, Seattle?
They were outsiders, but at the end of the day, I'm not surprised it happened because when the best offense goes against the best defense, usually the best defense wins. And Seattle had the best defense in the league. And Denver had the best offense. So it doesn't surprise me in general, but the manner of it surprised me.
Yeah. I gave up halfway through. I thought, well...
Oh, you gave it a go?
I gave it a go, but it's like, I don't really know what's going on. And then if it was close, I'd probably watch it the whole way through. But then I thought, this is just not... It's not worth it now.
I think the record is that no team's ever blown a 10-point lead. And so if they weren't there, like 22 points up at half-time.
Yeah.
Which is equivalent of being 3-0 up at half-time. So.
Yeah.
It's over.
So it had to be a Liverpool-Milan situation.
Yeah, and I mean, and instead you've got to endure Bruno Mars at half-time. No.
Middle of the road Bruno.
God, I have to listen to him every single day. When he's not ripping off Sting. He was the epitome of Smooth FM, because Smooth FM played cheesy music, they played depressing music, and they played hump music.
They still do, you just don't have to listen to it.
And with I Should Have Brought You Sodding... Yeah, exactly. And with I Should Have Sodding Brought You Flowers, which the new station plays as well. It is cheesy, depressing hump music.
Oh no, Just The Way You Are is worse than that.
Oh, plenty is, but...
Cheese Fest.
What are the ones that they play? They play the one that sounds like the... Just, it's a total rip-off of The Police. And then, God. Plenty of Maroon 5. Just the crossover now.
Okay, none of this music will be on the podcast.
No.
Thank God.
anyway, Phil Hoffman.
Well, yeah, we had a couple of deaths this week. I don't know if you know...
Probably not.
The first death, Maximilian Schell died.
Really?
Yeah.
He must have been getting on.
Well, yeah, obviously it's not in the same league of shock or whatever, but Maximilian Schell, really great in Judgment and Nuremberg.
And incidentally, this is going to sound terrible, but the first time I watched Judgment and Nuremberg, I assumed that Richard Widmark was Maximilian Schell.
Yeah, that very German Richard Widmark.
Yeah, well, no, because
it kind of does sound like he might be.
No, it's just because that was my first Richard Widmark film, and I just thought, I assumed because Widmark, I thought on my first watch, Widmark was the best. And
really?
So I thought it must be him. If he's won the Oscar, if someone's won the Oscar for this, it must be the prosecuting guy, and no, it was the guy who was shouting a lot. But no, Schell was really good in Judgment Nuremberg. I mean, that for me is probably the most amount of nominations I give something in the top six categories.
Yeah.
So I just nominate everyone.
Just fill the ballots up.
Everyone. Dietrich is probably a win, or she's up there. Garland, I certainly nominate. I nominate
Clift.
Yeah, Clift, and then I nominate Ridmark and Shell, and Tracy's probably in the top 10. And in fact, I might nominate Tracy as well. It's something like 10 nominations in the top 6 categories for me.
Yeah, I'm not fan of Tracy in general, but yeah, he's so good
he's
in
excellent
that.
Here. Excellent.
And
excellent.
Bert Lancaster, really good in this.
Can you believe I forgot Bert? I mean, I'm going to have nominated him as well.
Yeah.
Let's be fair.
Okay, so Maximilian Schell died, very sad, and then shockingly, Philip Seymour Hoffman, couple of days later.
And well, my immediate reaction was it's got to be drugs, just because of his age. But
yeah, but you get people dying of like heart murmurs and things like that.
That's what my mum said, actually.
Really,
people get heart attacks in their 40s, Peter.
Just thinking of. More positive spins on it, but
well, like Natasha McElhone's husband, he just dropped dead on the doorstep while she was away filming. It's terrible.
Well, Natasha Richardson as well, skiing accident.
Schumacher, he's still.
I think he's looking better though, isn't he?
I think they're worried about whether after they get him out of the induced coma, we're going to a real one.
Oh, right. Okay. But Phil Hoffman.
Yeah.
He is actually going to be in 4 more films.
Really?
The 2 Hunger Games ones. Anton Corbin's new film.
Ooh.
And this other one, John Slattery, directing it.
I've already got the line. Shall I just get it out of the way now?
Go for it.
Because, I mean, we've been doing the podcast for about a year and a half, so we've encountered Phil Hoffman a few times. And you're not the biggest fan of Phil Hoffman, but then again, that is because you're so naturally slim.
Sizest over there.
Yeah, I was making my coffee, which I'm 2/3 of the way down, I was just thinking about that one.
Yeah, I mean, I was kind of hit and miss about him, but you can't deny Capote, he's just wonderful. And it is really sad news because you know that he could do so much more.
When it comes to things like this, people who die before their time because of drugs, it's depressing, but I can't really feel sad about it because of the drugs angle. But I do just feel sad for the children. That's the really saddening part for me. I mean, obviously it's a horrendous waste of talent.
Yeah. But addiction is sad though, you know, but I didn't really know. Apparently it's been public knowledge that he was in rehab.
Oh, right, I didn't know.
I didn't either. You just wouldn't really expect it. You wouldn't expect somebody that old to be so addicted either. It's more of a young person thing. But
young man's game.
Yep. But anyway, very sad. Okay. So we're going to say our top 3 performances at the end?
Yeah.
Is that what you think?
Yeah, that'll do. Off the top of my head.
Okay, next bit of news. It's still sad. Kristen Scott Thomas has announced that she's not going to be making any more films.
Really?
Yeah.
Is this because she's following Juliet Binoche's footprints and donning the dance shoes?
What dance shoes?
Remember when Binoche took a year off acting so she could go dancing with some bloke? You not hear about this? This
sounds like a sequel to Certified Copy.
Yes. No, this happened. She the reviews were basically it looks like this guy who's really amazing is just dancing with one of his 20 students who's had like a year in a studio.
No, it's nothing that romantic. It's I think she's just sick of it, and she said that she's sick of getting scripts that are kind of beneath her and then wanting her just to kind of be the name or the biggest name in the film.
Which is strange considering the films that she's been doing recently. I mean, she's been doing stuff that is, I mean, like the one where she gets kidnapped. I can't remember the name of it off the top of my head. And
In Your Hands or something?
Yeah, something like that. And she did the one with Sergi Lopez. And she's been doing stuff that is more challenging and the sort of Charlotte Rampling-ish type roles.
Yeah. Well, she, I think there's a direct quote from her saying that she didn't like the filming of Only God Forgives.
So maybe she didn't.
Maybe we can blame Refn for this.
Well, yeah, let's.
But like stuff like Sarah's Key and things like that,
yes,
is obviously just getting her in to try and sell it to the European crowd. But
well, I suppose. But then again, you can see why she might want to do it, because it is baity. I mean, and baity, I mean, interesting, not because she's trying to go for an Oscar, but because most baity type things are challenging for an actor, actress or an actor, and that's why they want to do them. And that's why they win awards.
Yeah. But, I mean, maybe she's going to do TV or theatre, or, I guess. I mean, I don't doubt
she'll
she's
be
quitting.
In, she'll be in demand. I doubt this will stand up.
Yeah.
It'll be a hiatus.
Yeah. And the big return. The big comeback, a la Ingrid Bergman in Anastasia.
Where she seduces Melville Poupard in something.
Don't rule it out.
Wouldn't put it past her.
Okay.
And that's just life. We're not even talking about films.
Yeah. All right. Next bit of news, we have Oscar controversy.
Oh, God.
Do you know about this?
Of course not.
Well, what a question. Do you remember that we talked about the original song nomination for the Christian film?
Yes, yes, yes.
And the guy being
the former president of the branch, the music branch.
Yeah. So yeah. This is Alone Yet Not Alone, and it's been disqualified.
What?
Yeah, the nomination's been rescinded.
Because?
Because he emailed a third of the branch.
Yeah, you're not. As I said, did I say this? I swear, I thought you weren't allowed to do that.
Yeah. Well, it's like, apparently you've got to have publicity, you've got to have some kind of, like...
So in other words, in order to pimp your film, you can't actually tell someone that you know or that you may have worked with before, you've got to buy advertising space in Variety and The Hollywood Reporter.
Yes. But the thing is, why would you email them? Because then it's in writing.
Hmm.
You know?
But I thought it was only if you... I thought their problem was if you were running down someone else or if you were pimping somebody else. Like, was it Robert Wise who was saying why Scorsese should win for Gangs of New York? And that was like a big no-no at the time because you're actively pimping someone to everybody else.
Yeah.
Maybe that's it. You can't even pimp yourself to everybody else.
But what about that guy from The Hurt Locker? He got his... The producer got taken away from
him. Yeah, and but what does it say about what? Oh, what's her name? I'm terrible tonight. The woman who did Anna in the like 86.
Sally Kirkland. Actress.
Yeah, Sally Kirkland, because that was a word of mouth thing, where she was literally like handing out VHSs of this film to get people to watch it.
Yeah.
So you, I take it you couldn't do that now.
I guess not.
You got this. You got to send it via registered post.
You definitely couldn't do a Mary Pickford.
Yeah. Well, no, because you couldn't get 6,000 people in the room for tea.
No.
Tea in inverted commas.
Tea and sympathy. Okay, so that's a bit of controversy for this year. Mm. So next port of call, last bit of news, we have the César nominations were announced.
Oh, God.
Yes.
Was Kelly Riley nominated again?
No, Kelly Riley not included this year, I'm afraid.
That's just shocking.
Yeah. I guess she was eligible, because that Chinese puzzle came out there.
Oh my God.
It did.
It's only French productions. Well, only French. This is, now, in all seriousness, I think this is how the Oscars should go. And I know this is in a year where they've just finally given nominations to a Wong Kar Wai film. But in general, I do, because their record on foreign language is so token that if you are only going to have it as a token gesture every now and again for the one or two films that can afford to buy your vote, Because yeah. every single vote is bought. I mean, every single nomination is bought. Even Richard Jenkins in The Visitor, that nomination was bought and paid for through the through the advertising and what have you. But I just think if that is the case, then and you're going to be so token towards foreign cinema in general, just have it American productions, which is what they do in, with the Césars and what they do with the Goyas in France, in yeah. Spain. So that if you're... This is why The Pianist won. And I think there's another Polanski film that won the Césars as well. Was it Tess? Might have been Tess. But yeah. yeah, so if it's got American... if for the Oscars, if it had has American money involved, then fine. It's eligible. If it doesn't, don't bother. Because so few films actually make a dent.
But with the Goyas, I mean, they nominated Ryan Reynolds for Buried.
I know.
How can that be? That's not nothing to do with Spanish cinema, as far as I'm concerned. Fair enough, it had Spanish money in it and the Spanish yeah. director, but still, it's just not. Mm. But the reason I don't agree is because, yeah, it would be more pure that way. But the thing is, I think like foreign nominations bring the foreign films to a wider audience.
True,
and I think that's only a good thing.
It is only a good thing, but you just when it just rankles me when it's so token, and you just think, well, yeah, that isn't the be all and end all when it comes to cinema, yeah. And also it's kind of it's a long rant, and I want to get it under an hour this week. You git.
I think that might be tough.
You git. But just, going off at 60.
I just quickly want to mention the picture nominations for the Césars.
Okay.
We have Jimmy P, The Past, Venus in Fur, which Irini loves, Blue is a Warmest Colour, and Stranger by the Lake, which I saw this week, and I want to see it.
Why does this ring a bell?
This is the gay murder mystery set on a cruising lake.
Isn't every single murder mystery gay? Sorry. I can't believe we just said that. Taxi for Shepherd.
I think this is, well, this is like totally up my street because I love murder mysteries. So.
Where's Truman Capote?
Best Actress, Catherine Deneuve. The Deneuvely Restraint. On my way, yeah.
Yeah, which is very good.
Fanny Ardant nominated.
Nice. Age-appropriate hotness.
Yeah. And Emmanuel Seigneur, Venus in Fur, also nominated right. there.
Just hotness. Emmanuel Seigneur letting me know I was straight since 1988 and fishnet stockings in the Frantic.
Also nominated Mads Mikkelsen for that. Do you remember that one that came out the other...
Coco Chanel and Igor Stravinsky. Am I a bit late on that one?
No, something about Mikhail.
Yeah, I've seen it. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that one.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. All right.
I looked for it online.
Is it?
Honest Governor. I looked for it. I didn't find it.
Oh, okay. All right. Preconceptions.
Yeah, this week we're doing Lone Survivor, Out of the Furnace, which are the two films that were released this week. And then we're having a catch-up of films that one of us has seen and the other one hasn't. Which means I'm finally seeing Short Term 12, Cal's seeing The Place Beyond the Pines, I'm seeing Museum Hours, Cal's seeing The Wall, and I'm seeing The Spectacular Now, which are on various previous episodes if you want to go and have a hunt around and hear what Cal thought of them.
Yeah, so we're not having a plot rundown of any of these.
No.
Because we've already done it.
Yeah. Yes, so preconceptions for you for Lone Survivor. My preconception was I don't want to watch it because it looks awful.
Yeah, not the biggest fan of war films, and the fact that it was based on a true story from Afghanistan didn't really
appeal.
No, I did like The Hurt Locker, so I'm not completely against recent war films.
Well, someone had to.
Lots of people did.
People who like really slow close-ups of sand raising off the... That's what I think of that film.
This is from the director of Battleship, so not exactly a good pedigree.
Really?
Yes.
Holy shit, I didn't know that.
Are you pleased now that you didn't see?
Oh, Shepard, you genius. You Mourinho of the cinema.
Mark Wahlberg's in it, which isn't a plus for me, but it isn't.
So he's playing the person who wants to be portrayed as a tough guy.
Yes.
What a shock.
Yes.
Out of the furnace. I had seen the trailer a few times. It looked okay. And a preconception from that trailer was that while Casey Affleck looked good in it, I thought he just don't worry, he lasts more than half an hour in this film before it kicks in. So I'm not a fan of Christian Bale. Although I don't think he's bad in everything. I mean, I did really like in Flowers of War. But as we said when we did American Hustle. But I was sort of thinking, director Crazy Heart, here's a preconception for you. I think what I saw of Scott Cooper when Crazy Heart was doing the rounds for the Oscars, I just found him incredibly arrogant and pretentious with the way that he was like acting like he'd made this masterpiece throwback to 70s cinema, as if 70s cinema was even good anyway. It really annoyed me. Was it 2010? Crazy Heart?
2009, I think. Not a great film for me.
No. I thought it was quite good, but just from the way he was acting, it's like he just made five easy pieces.
Yeah, yeah.
And so, yeah, so that was a preconception. I was thinking from the genre-ness of it, I was thinking, really, this is your follower, Mr. Pretencioso. So short-term 12. I didn't really have any preconceptions. I knew you'd like this, and I knew Irene liked this. And I knew there was a supposedly extraordinarily good-looking man who puts Paul Ball to shame, who's going out with, what's her face?
Was there?
Well, no. you both put him above. He won for both of you on the Paul Ball range.
No, he didn't.
Yes, he did.
What, Mr. Gallagher?
The boyfriend, yeah.
No,
he
didn't.
The boyf. I thought he did.
No, the guy who won was the teacher in the family.
The teacher?
Who the girl in the family sleeps with. It's only been 6 weeks. Do you not remember?
The teacher, the girl in the family sleeps. I have no idea what you've just said.
The Robert De Niro film, The Family.
Oh, him. No, there was two. There was...
Zach and him.
Yeah.
Trust me, this guy didn't make it.
I was going to say.
Yeah.
My line for later was, there's hope for us all. Let's get that out there early. Melville, I was going to say, outside of Montpellier, there's a pack of wolves howling on behalf of Monsieur Poupon.
No, although they might be this week.
Okay, so Brie Larson, that's her name. Yeah, so all I knew was that you guys liked it, and that was about it.
Maybe we should have done Spectacular first, because then you would have had a Brie Larson preconception from Spectacular.
And it was, you know what my other film that I wanted to see was, which I didn't get round to? Don John's Addiction, which guess who is in?
Is she?
Yes,
apparently. Who is she in that?
I don't know, probably just one of the myriad of people that he jacks off over.
I'll have to mull that over. I can't remember it being in that. Mm. Okay, right, are you done with that preconception? Even the false preconceptions about the smoking hotness of...
Yeah, no. I was thinking you'd go crazy.
Okay, The Place Beyond the Pines.
You'd put him in the Royal on the Saturday night, I'd have a better chance. Good God. Place Beyond the Pines, yeah.
I knew that you really, really, really didn't like it.
But then that probably means it's going to be like an 8 out of 10 at least for you.
Well,
B plus.
Well, the thing is, you didn't dislike Blue Valentine, but you weren't a fan, were you?
No, it was like a 5 out of 10.
Yeah, so I really liked it, and it's in my top 3, I can't remember, somewhere.
You liked it so much you snubbed this one at the cinema.
Yeah, yeah. that's been rectified a year later. But yeah, so I was kind of looking forward to it. Obviously, I like Ryan. Bradley Cooper has... improved steadily.
Yes.
So I was looking forward to it, kind of, but the
Were you looking forward to the crack whore Eva Mendes to see what I'm finally talking about?
She's not a crack whore. That was a lie.
That's what she looks like.
Yeah.
Looks like.
I was thinking, is she going to be suddenly going to break out the pipe or whatever? She's actually the nicest character in the film. It's like... Anyway. Okay. Rose Byrne, you didn't
mention.
That's
like saying Christian Benteke is the best player at Aston Villa.
I knew you didn't like it. The length was putting me off. And that's why I hadn't seen it up until now, because I could have seen it any time in the last 6 months and hadn't bothered.
Couldn't be asked.
Yeah.
Yeah, so Museum Hours, I knew you really loved this one. Kind of hopeful with it being a two-hander. I usually like these sort of things. That's about it.
You like two-handers?
Yes.
Next, The Wall. You made this sound really depressing.
Yeah.
And you did mention that the dog bit the dust, which was, I was not looking forward to that. Martina Gedek, I haven't really seen her in much, so
have you seen The Lives of Others yet, Savage?
No. No. To be honest, from your review, I don't fully remember if you mentioned the plot thing.
I think I tried not to.
Yeah, because I was thinking, oh, this is not what I thought it was going to be.
I know, right?
I'm going to mention it. Sod it. You are out for months.
We can mention it now, but I do think what we might do is that if you don't want to know what we're talking about, just skip forward a minute or something.
Yeah, but not now.
Yeah, not now, no. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, Spectacular Now. What did I know about this?
That I loved
it. I knew Shailene Woodley was in it. And I knew Miles Teller was in it, and that was about it, really.
Pretty okay. Much. All right.
I couldn't really remember what you were saying about it. Also, because the other thing is, I didn't want to go back and listen to the reviews even before, either before I watched the film or before tonight.
Yeah. Because you didn't want to.
No. Yeah.
Anything implanted in your head or anything.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So, Lone Survivor.
Yeah, can I just point out that by this time last week we are now halfway through last week's episode.
Glorious
episode.
This is what happens when there's death to discuss and random French hotness.
Well, that's rarely a bad thing.
Okay, Lone Survivor. This is the latest film from the renowned director Peter Berg. And
it's Peter Berg. It's Peter Berg. Oh my god! This is the guy who did a Welcome to the Jungle with The Rock and Stifler.
No, is it?
Yes, I think so. Off the top of my head, I think so.
What a filmography! That Battleship and now this.
he's steadily downhill. I take it.
No, it's not.
Okay,
we'll get there. It's based on a true story. A group of American soldiers have been deployed in Afghanistan, and their mission is to capture or kill this notorious Al-Qaeda leader. This was in 2005. The main character is Mark Wahlberg, and his team are kind of left to fight for their lives on this mountain hillside when things don't go according to plan with the mission, and they get set upon by a group of Taliban soldiers. So, it's not exactly a barrel of laughs. But
I was saying this. You make it sound like Beverly Hills Cop 2.
It's strange because
are there any tall, leggy blondes who used to be married to Sylvester Stallone? No.
There isn't a single woman in the film. Which worked for me.
That sound I'm not hearing right now is you not complaining.
Melva will be. It's unfortunately what bothers me most about the film is that it's bookended by two very pro-war sequences.
I was going to say, are they shots akin to Mr. Affleck returning home to his wife in Argo?
Yeah. This has actually got a couple of comparisons to Argo, and which I'll get onto. It's Alan Arkin Turner.
FYI, my brother saw Argo for the first time about a week ago, and I told him that Alan Arkin had got Oscar nominated. He said, "Who is he?" I said, "The bloke who's the producer." He said, "What?"
Yeah. Yep. This is if you're tuning in, it's 2014. It's not last year. Although this did happen last year as well.
Yeah.
But no, it starts off where it's like a series of training sequences, which just looks like an army kind of recruitment video. Mm-hmm. And then at the end, Wahlberg's voiceover is like what might be on a recruitment video.
Right.
Where he's seeming all badass and very kind of poignant about war and
the glories of the flag.
Indeed. But the good thing is that it doesn't sugarcoat war too much. It isn't like these people just come in and it's all been like they've struggled, but it's been okay in the end. Because a lot of the cast don't make it, as you might suggest.
Right? Lone survivor, yeah.
Yeah. It's like Mark Wahlberg gets a lot of help from the locals, which is
big New Kids on the Block fans.
The Calvin Klein kids.
He kept hold of the Diggler prosthetic.
Yeah.
United.
Oh, the bazooka.
Yeah.
But it's like, I don't know anything about this story, so I can't complain about how the Afghanis would not like lay their lives on the line, which they do in this film, for him, even though he's a stranger. And he's like the only one of a million American soldiers or whatever that they decided to shelter.
Right.
But it's very visceral as a film. It is well directed, which is bigger shock of the night, really.
Yeah.
Given that it's the guy who did Battleship. But it is really accomplished. The sound nominations are deserved.
Really?
Yep. It's quite green grassish in that way.
Right.
And it's well edited, it's well paced. The problem is, for me, that the script, not a lot happens. It's kind of like Green Zone. You've seen Green Zone?
A half an hour of it.
Yeah, it's kind of like, it's got this point where war is difficult, war's tough, and it's about comradeship, and the rapport of the soldiers is actually really well done, but not much happens, and I feel like it isn't worth telling the story ultimately, because it's just like, well, it's not got the intrigue and like the underlying politics of like Rescue Dawn, something like that, or the human emotion of that, and
or the performance value,
or Steve's
arm. I would wager. Yes, I meant that. I'm not talking about Bale, am I? Steve's Arn is great in that. Peter Berg filmography: Welcome to the Jungle, Friday Night Lights, The Kingdom, Hancock, and Battleship.
Well, actually, I really loved Friday Night Lights.
I know. I know. And The Kingdom's okay. I mean, he's not exactly. And he also is an actor. I actually remember him from stuff like Copland. So he does act as well.
So he's not very old, see?
No, he's probably mid-40s, I would think. Born 1964, so just turned 50. Turning 50 in 2 months.
Yeah. But he has done well, actually. It's kind of like on the Argo level for me, just because I don't think there's much to Argo's script either, ultimately. It just kind of turns into this flimsy kind of suspense thing in the final third. And this is similar, but it really packs a punch at times. And it's difficult for me to judge because the pro-war stuff did bother me, but it's kind of like what you were saying with saving Mr. Banks. Like, the fact that they've been dishonest about the story. Does that make you give the film a worse grade?
Yeah, I mean, is it for the better? Yeah, I see what you mean, yeah.
So if I take politics out of it, and not...
Just treat it on its own merits.
Yeah, and get rid of the distaste of the politics, then...
Like Braveheart.
Yeah.
Because Braveheart is one of the most historically ridiculous films ever.
Well, that's just distasteful, full stop.
The whole Mel Gibson shagging Sophie Marceau stuff. Mm.
I'm gonna err on the side of positivity and give it a C+ because I do think it's well crafted and a decent war film. Mm. It's just it's not got enough content for me, substance.
Really. Yeah.
So yeah.
Mm. Okay, so onto my favourite actor in the world, Christian Bale.
Whee.
And his new horrendously titled film, Out of the Furnace. Apparently Terrence Malick suggested this title.
Right. Has he seen the film?
Well, if he hasn't, he's a lucky boy. No, I'm kidding. So the setup of the plot is that Christian Bale works in the local mill, and guess what? Guess what he does for a living?
He's a bad boy.
He operates a furnace.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I thought he was a criminal for some reason. I haven't looked at
that. Well, we'll get there. We'll get
all right,
there.
Okay.
And so he's got a brother, played by Casey Affleck, who's a soldier, and he's got a ridiculously attractive wife, girlfriend, played by Zoe Saldana, and a dad who's basically Jason Robards in Magnolia.
On his deathbed?
Yeah.
Okay.
And Sam Shepard's involved as well, which is always good. Another Paris, Texas mention on the podcast.
Sam Shepard, Mud, August, and now this.
Yeah.
It's getting about a bit.
Yeah. What's your favourite performance of his Steel Magnolias?
Sam Shepard?
Yeah. You just completely thrown you there. Name a Sam Shepard performance.
I can't remember.
The Right Stuff?
The Right Stuff, he's quite good in that. Is he in Country?
Is he
Jessica
Lange's
husband in Country?
He might be. That might be a tremendous shout there, Reed. Mm. Anyway.
That's good.
Yeah. His brother's in the military, and he owes a bit of money. Casey starts owing money to a local bloke played by Willem Dafoe.
Mm.
And while Bale is busy paying off Casey's debt to Willem Dafoe, on the way home, out of the blue, this is only 15 minutes into the film, it's not a tremendous spoiler, although they hid it in the trailer, he runs into a family, we presume kills them, and gets sent to prison for drink driving. So,
who is this Bale?
Bale, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
So, cut to however many years later when he gets out, Affleck is now dodgily, like bare knuckle fighting for Willem Dafoe. Saldana has left him for the local cop, played by Forrest Whitaker. She never went to see him in prison. What a lovely woman she is. And I'll stop the plot rundown right there because it's basically a win to get out. They give away so much in this trailer. I mean, they give away over half the film in the trailer.
Yeah.
Because you know from watching the trailer that Casey's bare knuckle boxing in that Woody Harrelson's hick gangster has either kidnapped him or something. That's what you know from the trailer.
Right.
And this is just so shoddily written that it defies conception, because it's like Bale goes to jail for drink driving, and then when Casey comes to pick him up from the jail, he says, "Do you want to drive? Would you not have lost your license if you just killed people drink driving?"
Yeah, definitely.
And so he drives home. and Then immediately he's got exactly, so basically as soon as he's out, he's in exactly the same position he was before. He's got his job back. He's driving around everywhere. There's just zero consequences to it. And I was trying to, on the drive to work this morning, I was trying to think, what is the dramatic point of having him being sent away to prison? And the only thing I could think of was that it's a shoehorned way to try and separate him and Saldana, even though that's a completely skated over subplot that has no business in the film anyway.
Mm. Has Scott Cooper written this?
Yeah, him and someone else.
Original?
I think so, yeah. Mm. And then there's just all the... And so it's Casey turns up in prison and informs him that his father's died and that he's missed the funeral. It's like, you do get compassionate leave sometimes. You would actually apply for it. This isn't something you would find out after the fact if you were in jail that your dad's died. And by the way, FYI, there was a funeral.
Yeah.
And then on top of that, some of the dialogue is just ridiculous. Sam Shepard turns up afterwards and says, "Do you want to come and go to your daddy's grave?" To which Christian Bale has to respond, "Shit, yeah." I mean, oh my god.
What about the performances?
They're solid. The performances are solid. Okay. Casey's good at the beginning. Bale is fine. He doesn't have a lot to do, and he only on one or two occasions goes in his usual crazy Christian Bale-ness. Harrelson is probably one of his least interesting performances, actually. I mean, this is not... I mean, he's playing like the baddie. You'd think this could be quite delicious, but it's a pretty charmless role. It's a very 2D role. So it's certainly not the walking Oscar clip machine of The Messenger. It's certainly not the visceral force of nature that is Rampart or something like
that.
This isn't his film. And it just feels like... I mean, Zoe Saldana, on the other hand, is absolutely woeful.
I thought you were going to say brilliant there.
No, she's terrible. There's this scene when Bale finally gets the nerve to go up and speak to her once he's out, and she gives a bit of news as to why they can't get back together. I mean, as if it's even slightly possible to care anyway. Because it's so skated over. I mean, everything is so superficial that... that is one of the worst acted scenes of the year, and she gets worse, and she's even worse after that. But the problem is that... he tries to cross-cut a lot from a technique standpoint. He tries to cross-cut a lot. So as soon as Bale gets out of prison, you'll have a scene cross-cutting him doing up the house with Casey bare-knuckle boxing. It's like, yeah, I get it. They're both getting on with their lives in different ways and blah, 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 blah.
Hmm.
And then they'll have Bale... It's all the way through. All the way through, you'll have Bale doing something which is then contrasting with whatever Casey's doing at the time. And this is the whole... I mean, this is a two-hour film, and Casey doesn't actually go missing until halfway through. And so then, what happens?
Which was in the trailer.
Yeah, which is in the trailer that he's going looking for his brother because his brother's gone missing and Woody's been involved and blah 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 blah. And so I was kind of thinking, well, why is even Saldana in this film? Because I can't see what benefit her subplot brings of him coming out and her not being there. The only thing I can think of is that when Affleck goes missing, the cop is the guy, Forrest Whitaker, is the guy who's now with her. And so so Bale's like thinking, are you trying to say that you're not trying to do anything because you're scared of these like guys up in the mountains who've got Ur-Lor unto themselves? And is it because... you're now with my bird, and it's just so weak.
I did hear that it was kind of, you could see what was coming at every step.
Yeah,
that's what a criticism of it was. And people die in this, right?
They do, but yeah. It doesn't flesh anything out. So the relationship with Saldana is completely... They don't even scratch the surface, let alone get the blades in to skate over it. There's a religious thing where he's like in jail and he's suddenly like at church and all this sort of stuff, and that's just really just a token gesture. And then the interesting part of it would be when Casey finally, he'll like come out with these things like what he's seen over in Afghanistan, but because you're not seeing anything from his point of view, and it's all it just all feels tacked on, and so as a result nothing takes on an emotional level whatsoever in this film. And then it does have some... Oh, actually, remember I was saying I couldn't think why Bale had gone to jail? I've just remembered what I was thinking about this morning in the car when I was driving past the cricket ground in Birmingham. So the point is that Sam Shepard, because he's killed someone, then halfway through the film, Sam Shepard takes him hunting. And while he's hunting, there's a cross-cutting scene, long cross-cutting scene, very Christopher Nolan, of Bale hunting a deer with Sam Shepard while Casey's going up to the mountains to meet with Defoe, Willem Dafoe, to meet Woody Harrelson for the fight. I mean, okay, fine, I really do get it.
Yeah.
When you... I've completely lost my train of thought there. Probably didn't even merit it. So the reason why that Bale went to jail dramatically is that when he does that hunting thing, he can't actually kill the deer. Because he's killed someone.
This sounds terrible. Blah, blah, blah.
So when it turns into a revenge thing against him and Woody Harrelson, because it's so underdeveloped, when it actually comes to the crux, there's nothing on it. Mm. And you know what? I think I might have put this in at 5 out of 10 yesterday. I'm just talking through it on IMDb. This is talking through it. I've no idea why. I think it's because it's... And...
Because of the acting, maybe, you know?
Maybe, but yeah, maybe. I mean, it's watchable, but it is overlong. It's got no this story's got no business being 2 hours.
Yeah.
But it's okay. It's not bad. It's not bad. It's just that all these things I'm saying, they're really obvious flaws that prevent it from being a good film. There's so many things so consistently that make you think, yeah, that's why this isn't good. Yeah, that's why this isn't good. But it doesn't necessarily make it bad. Well, apart from Zoe Saldana. But I don't know.
So is it 4 or 5?
You know, I'll stay with 5 because it was watchable enough, but its flaws are abundant, and it's like you earlier, I am just erring on the side of the positive.
Yes. Yeah.
Which I always do.
And we're going to keep that a theme.
Well, we've already had that once, accentuate the positive, as the title for the podcast.
That's true. Okay, so
Short
term 12. We're going to catch up with 2013 films we missed.
Yes.
And first of all, we have this lovely uplifting film called Short Term 12. So we've
What did you give this? I can't remember. You like this, right? Yeah.
I liked it. I gave it a B.
Oh, I thought you liked it more than that. Okay.
But I did think it treat issues that could be kind of cliche with a little bit more depth.
Right. I actually made, not deliberately, it just happened. I made a few notes on this.
Okay.
First, shall I just run you through the notes?
Yeah, go on.
It says, moving sin. That means I was pissed off because he would not stop moving the camera. And I didn't dislike this one. This is just what notes I've got, what notes I have there. And the second one is, laying on thick with an arrow pointing towards the word overamped. And I think that is the case when it gets into the more...
her background.
Meatier aspects of the story, let's just put it that way. Next sentence is eye-rolling in places.
Okay.
And then there's a quote, which is near the end, and it said, the quote that she says is, I need to work, and this is, you need to be an empathetic sounding board, ? At that point of the story. So I'm having all these terrible things happening to me, and I need to work right now. I need to go in here, and a lot of kids say why their life is so shit, and just like really dig into there, and just think, yes, I feel your pain.
Yeah, it does. I think her background could be handled better. I'm not sure they need the physical stuff with Brie as well. But what about the relationships? Because I think that's a stronger point of it.
I like I like the dynamic between the adults and the children.
Mm-hmm.
Very nice to see Rami Malek in this. The newbie teacher who comes in. He was in the Pacific and he was really, really good in the Pacific. He's like one of the soldiers one of the main guys meets when he's out there.
Okay. Super. What's he called?
Rami Malek. I think that's his name. The tall, thin, good looking guy.
Yeah.
He's a good little actor. I was just pleased when I saw him. I thought, oh, it's you, yes.
What about Caitlin Deva and Keith Stanfield? Because I really liked them.
This is Jaden and the lad with the Siamese fighting fish, yeah.
Yeah, the lads, the lad who does the rap.
Yes, yeah. Good. I think probably I just shade the lad. Because I think he had more going on. I think he's more natural, whereas I think the girl was a little bit, I don't want to say nuanced, it's the wrong word, and I don't want to say mannered, because she wasn't particularly, she's a little bit mannered, a tiny bit mannered, but not overpoweringly so. But how effing depressing is that shark story? I mean, my God. My God.
What's the shark story?
Where it's like the girl, it's like this like children's story that the girl's made up, which is basically an allegory for what her dad's doing to her, and like the octopus has eight arms.
Oh yeah.
It's like is Bruno Mars singing? What's going on?
But do you see what I mean now when she goes into the house with the baseball bat?
Because
it's a
bit of a stretch.
Yeah, but I was expecting it to go the other way around.
Oh right, for it to actually go for it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And to walk in. But that doesn't happen. So, and then
walk in doing her best Vladimir Guerrero impression.
Yeah. But instead, it's kind of like she's the messed up one.
Just point out that I'm wearing a Angels baseball T-shirt at the moment? While I just mentioned Vlad,
does he still play for them?
No. A couple of years ago, I think he went to Baltimore to DH for them.
Okay. So where do you stand on Short Term 12 overall? He's kind of middling on it.
Yeah, I'm very middling on it. I think the performances are decent, but I don't think they elevate, in general, I mean more the adults here, but they don't elevate the material so much to make it extraordinarily compelling. I think content is handled, I think it is. I'm trying to think of the word. It is late. I think I've got it smack on the nose. They lay it on a bit thick.
Yeah.
But I'm not convinced that the attempted levity outside of that, so that they bookend it with, like, they try and make some things, like, amusing. And I can see why they do it, because when they go depressing, they go really depressing. So you do kind of have to, maybe, try and balance that out somehow.
But like the story, you mean?
Yeah, the stories. Which I do think is realistic, because, I mean, this is a job for people, and you are going to make friends, and you are going to tell stories, and you are going to have a laugh. And you, in that line of work, you've probably got to have a laugh.
Yeah.
To get through the day. Yeah. But I think in terms of, like, the balance of tone, I don't think it's entirely successful. Same with the style. I mean, some of the shots are nice, but then again, the cinematography, the constant moving of the camera, it did bother me. I was like, for God's sake, just find a shot that you like and leave the camera there for a few seconds. But
get the tripod.
And back to Mark Wahlberg and his Douglas prosthetic. So yeah, this is a 5 out of 10. Three stars for me. And it was my second Brie Larson film of the week.
Yeah. Well. My first visit to The Place Beyond the Pines was interesting. It's I knew it was three stories.
It really is, isn't it?
Yeah, although I do think, having seen the three stories, that they kind of complement each other in certain ways, and that the whole thing is kind of ambitious.
Yes.
The first section is the weakest. I think you said this, didn't you?
No, I said the third section was... the third section, I just didn't care about the characters or anything. I think the third section's where it really falls off the cliff. Because it
The problem is, it's, I don't believe that Dane DeHaan's character would act like that.
Yeah.
At the end. And it's too contrived. It's kind of like
it's
the worst.
It's so contrived.
It's like the worst of Inarritu.
Yes.
At times, it's just.
Or what was that German one? With the Turkish director, The Edge of Edge of Heaven.
Faith Akin, yeah.
Yeah, Fatih Akin, yeah. The Edge of Heaven. Yeah. Like that, where you just got the people on the bus and they're almost seeing each other. Oh, and they're so close. Oh, my God. But he's looking for her and she's on the bus in the lane next to her on the motorway. What's going on? No.
Oh, it's,
yeah, that was subtle.
Yeah. Well, yeah, but that happened in something else, didn't it? I'll try to, that happened. What about in The Impossible, where they're all walking around and they're all missing each other?
Yeah, but that they do find each other in that scene, though, at the very least.
Yeah. But I do think the film's really interesting. Like, I like how it compares the two generations, and I like that the Tearaway, the younger Tearaway, is not the son of Gosling, it's the son of Cooper.
Mm. I just think was my Razzie win for the year?
Who?
Emery Cohen.
Oh, no, I think he was interesting.
God. Horrendous.
He plays it's a bit like the guy from the Canyons. He's supposed to be an idiot,
this is a character straight out of a Scary Movie who would just get knifed by them for pretending to be black.
But there are like little touches, like I like where Dane DeHaan's talking with his stepdad. Which was a really interesting scene, and I like that both of them asked questions that I wanted to find out, that I wanted to know. Like, it felt like that was exactly what they should have been talking about at that period of time, and it had finally come to that where the kid needed to know stuff, and they needed to be honest with each other.
Did you see what I mean, though, when I just remembered that I said this, when it's like, your dad's running for mayor or whatever it was, or chief district attorney or whatever it is. You've just been busted for drugs, and then 2 days later you're having a house party
and robbing a pharmacy.
Come on. I mean, as if your dad's going to go away 2 days later and then you're going to have a house party. I mean, what the hell?
Yeah, I don't know. I think the structure's interesting. I think it's edited pretty well. It's kind of evenly weighted throughout, but I do think it has really. No, I thought it was really watchable.
Mm.
But the whole Gosling thing, I didn't like that story because I just think it skated over too much. With his relationship with Eva Mendes, and I just didn't.
Do you see what I mean? I felt sorry for her bloke.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he's good in it. Well, but he's still around 15 years later, so he's you know, it's worked out pretty well for him.
Well, when you find Crack or Eva Mendes, you stay with Crack or Eva Mendes.
I can see why she's been say dude, though.
Unbelievably so. I never thought I'd ever say dude.
Yeah. It's a B- from me for The Place Beyond the Pines.
Mm. I thought you'd like it.
Yeah, well,
because when I really detest something that much, I mean, usually you quite like it. I mean, it's rare that we have like a trance situation.
Yeah, but you gave it 2 stars, didn't you?
I don't think this is. I think I gave it like 3 out of 10, 4 out of 10.
Mm. All right, Museum Hours.
I only watched half an hour of it.
Okay.
I didn't give up because it was terrible. I had a lot on this weekend. And if, for example, tonight... I'll run you through how my weekend went. So, I was watching Museum Hours on Sunday night, and I'd already watched Short Term 12 that night. And on the Saturday, I'd watched... Spectacular Now, and so I was doing one a day, and then it came to, and I was trying to do two in the one evening, and it was just, it was too slow, and I wasn't enjoying it. I really just didn't like the guy's voice. And when it's two Andrew about two people talking, and he's got the voiceover, and you don't like the delivery. You remember what were you saying?
The guy who's works so, the
that
museum
last week or 2 weeks ago. Yeah, you said someone was just she was just delivering her lines. That's all she was doing in the performance.
June Squibb.
Yeah, that was what I got from this guy. I mean, it's a little unfair because he is foreign, obviously. But
yeah,
and so Monday, so I watched half an hour of it. I could watch more of it, but Monday I had to come home, watch Out of the Furnace and Man City Chelsea, and then tonight I had to come home and then go out and play football, then do this podcast, and then tomorrow I have piano lessons and all life, and I can't. And then on Thursday I'll probably be watching the Super Bowl finally, and so there's no way I could have watched the other hour of this film.
Yeah, I mean, it is one that you definitely need to be, like, either be invested in it or kind of have to power your way through it, because it is slow, but I just think it's kind of like just
what
slow
happens,
and studious.
Yeah, you know? What happens with this woman, because,
well,
to begin with, no, I don't mean in terms of plot, I mean in terms of performance, because the sort of vibe I was getting from that she's clearly acting. I mean, no, I don't mean that in a bad way. I mean, she's clearly putting this real intense performance into very little being on the page. So she's going to it. She's actively going for it, and she's injecting something in there.
Yeah, but I think it's the fact that she's kind of try-hard because she is like a tourist, and she is very kind of trying to be cultured,
yeah,
ask him questions and seem more interested than she probably is.
And there's an overpowering emotion that I was getting from her, and I wasn't really sure where it was coming from.
Well, did you get to the point where her friend's in the hospital?
Yes.
Yeah, so I think it's to do with that. Like,
yeah, I got to the point basically where she's come back, she's got him to call, they've been to the hospital together, and then he starts taking her around the places that the tourists don't usually go because she hasn't really got any money, and they were basically in a cafe and he was telling her stories from the old days. I didn't stop because it was bad, I just stopped because I was tired and I had to go to work the next day.
Mm. Yeah, well, fair enough. Mm. Okay, next we have The Wall, which I caught up with, and this was really
scary. I saw your tweets.
It was very, very scary. It's just kind of like, you didn't mention it, and I'm going to mention it now, but basically she's in a cottage in the woods, and her friends go to the village. She wakes up, decides to go for a walk, and she
cannot... haven't come back.
Yeah, and she cannot walk past a certain point in the countryside. There is an invisible wall, and the wall extends around kind of the grounds and the forest area. Mm. And she just can't even get in. And I was thinking, this is the worst thing in the world. But then it doesn't do anything with that setup. It doesn't do anything with the concept.
It's isolationist rather than terror. It's more interested in her isolation as a character and the mental state rather than what would actually happen.
Yeah, but then it introduces things like it brings in a guy, and where's he come from? You know, it's and then it doesn't mention anything about the communication angle. I don't know when on earth it's supposed to be set.
And isn't it really creepy when she's like, you can see people and they're like, they're in slow motion? I can't really remember.
They're not moving, they're like
frozen.
They're
not moving, they're frozen, yeah. It's really creepy, isn't it?
Yeah.
But
then I'm thinking, is that an allegory of something?
Yeah.
And I was thinking, what is this an allegory of then?
It's Cold War, I think. Berlin Wall type thing.
Because then it just goes on and on.
Seminal German work, apparently.
Yeah. But then it just goes on and on about her and her animals. And like, I like a good animal-human bond. But the second half of this film, and or even maybe the second two-thirds of this film, is all about her and a cat, and her and a dog, and her and a cow. And I'm just not getting anything from that. I mean, what is she thinking about what's outside? What's happening? You don't get any of this thought. It's just, I love my cat. And it's just like, solitude, yeah, and it is emotional, but at the same time, I'm thinking, you've got such an interesting setup. What are you, why are you wasting it like this? But it is visually, it's nice, well shot, and she's good.
Right. There are many different ways to interpret House Hoffer's novel. It can be understood as a fairly radical criticism of modern civilization. The protagonist is forced to return to a more natural way of life, showing how useless cultural goods become in situations such as the one described in the novel, and how in the how life in the city makes people, quote, unfit for living in harmony with nature, unquote. The Mercedes-Benz automobile in which she arrives slowly becomes overgrown by plants. The wall, ending in inverted commas there,
yeah,
also seems to protect her, giving her the opportunity to change and rethink her priorities. The novel is also described as a 20th century Entwicklungsroman, which explores the psychological rather than socio-historic aspects of the heroine's maturation process.
All of that is very, very...
all very well and good.
Valid. It's all very... but... I don't dislike the film, really. It's just... I just... it wasn't what I was expecting. After half an hour, I thought, oh, I'm really interested in this film now. And I even thought, well, maybe there's going to be something at the end to give us a hint or to be open-ended about things that would return to the concept.
Yeah. But I don't think the framing device helps in that respect at all.
Yeah.
Because you can just see her on a Jean Todd.
Yeah.
Fumbling around depressed, wondering where the firewood is, or whatever. Where's my dog? Rover! You've gone. God, it's like the people in Northfield. That's such a Bremmy thing with the, when the Rover plank closed. My friend's stepdad was actually the MP for Northfield.
What happened?
A Rover closed, basically, in the mid-90s.
Oh, right, okay. All right, it's a terrible, C. It's a C for the wall.
Yeah, I think I go, it's like 7 out of 10, right? Something like that. Yeah. But it's a performance piece for her.
Yeah.
And it's also gorgeously shot.
It is, it is. Looks good.
So, lastly, but not leastly, the now that is spectacular.
Yes, and is it spectacular?
Well, it's not a mythical American sleepover, but it's not far off.
Okay. Interesting comparison.
Yeah, that was the natural comparison I got. And that's why I think when I finished watching it, I think, yes, 7 out of 10 is 4 stars. But then I thought, well, hang on, Peter, you gave them the American Sleepover 4 stars and 7 out of 10. So, and I do think it's at least a slight level below that. But I think with this, I think Miles Teller's really charming in it.
Yeah.
And I think he does what he can. I just have issues with the way that it's written. The subplot with Kyle Chandler feels really tacked on to me, and I think she is really underwritten as well. I think she's just this kind of nothing character, and I just wish more of it was told from her perspective, so I could get more of her rather than just being this doormatish character. And I was so unsurprised when I found out after the fact that this was the guys who wrote 500 Days of Summer, especially with the ending, which I really didn't like. Really, really didn't like the ending.
Right.
And so it's almost like it's like the anti 500 Days of Summer. It's like, oh, we've done the one where we've like put this bird on a pedestal, and now we're going to do the one where he just treats it like absolute crap.
I do have some problems with it. I do think she's underwritten. Like, there's a point where she said, "Oh, I've stood up to my mum," and it's like, "Well, we haven't seen your mum.
I know.
Where is your mum?
We haven't even seen your mum, let alone that scene."
A couple of scenes even would have done.
Yeah.
And the car accident, I think, is bad writing. I do like the end, actually. And I think she's tremendous, Shirlene. I think just she's just got such an inherent kind of lack of self-confidence and lack of self-worth that really does help when interacting with him, who's so confident, and their relationship.
Strange comparison of the week. I think with Shailene, it reminds me, looking back on it, of something like Shallow Hal, where you had all these ridiculously good-looking women portraying people who Jack Black's seen through his eyes. He's seen the inner beauty. So that the idea in Shallow Hal is that these people who you see as being really, really, really good looking actually aren't really, really, really good looking. So when he's cracking onto them, a lot of the actors did really well, just showing that sort of like, oh my god, why is this guy even interested in me? This is just a complete shock to me. All that sort of really sweet lack of self confidence, I think Shailene got that across really well, but I just totally didn't buy it because she's so good looking. I just do not think that Shailene Woodley is the girl that is going to get ignored at high school.
I don't know. I bought it.
Well, I didn't, but I bought it from the way that she played it.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Oh, absolutely. I really, really liked how she acted when he was asking her out. Like the thought had never crossed her mind.
Yeah.
I thought she did really well with it, but she's too good looking for the role.
Because
also, put up against him, he's not the most classically good looking of
young
men.
No, he isn't.
But then again, you know guys, I know guys like that. I think everybody knows guys like that who aren't, if you looked at it and thought, well, you're not exactly Melville Poupaud. But the personality
makes up for it.
Yeah, and will make them do extraordinarily well. Brie Larson, though, good God, she looks like 30 in this.
Yeah, she does look a lot older than him. She is, I think she's only 22, though.
Mid-20s, apparently.
Okay. Mm. What do you think of her in this?
Yeah, she's just there.
Yeah. Okay.
But I did enjoy it in general. It's just, the writing, it's as well made and well acted a film as poorly written as this could be.
Okay.
So 6 out of 10.
Alright. Okay, so, Shag, Marry or Kill.
Just go back quickly.
Yeah, go for it.
And the director of this is the guy who smashed.
Yeah, I know.
And I think it's a portrait, as a treatise on alcoholism, I think this is extraordinarily tacked on and poor, because when he suddenly has the scene where his boss says, you can keep the job if you can promise.
I love that scene. Again.
And they hadn't done enough for me on that subject throughout the film to get me in a position where I bought his reaction. I think it's acted really well.
Yeah.
But
do you not think, though, that the whole thing with the dad does kind of help with that? He's emulating his kind of self-destructive.
So the guy says to him, "If I feel like if I was your dad, I'd have to give you a lecture now." And he turns around and says, "Yeah, well, if you were my dad, you wouldn't have to." And I did think, that's, well, really? You're going to blame everything on the dad? Seriously? You're going to abdicate all responsibility for this?
Yeah.
And also, I didn't believe that he couldn't actually. I mean, I don't think they detailed the alcoholism enough to make that believable for me, just from by that point in the film. But I did like this.
Yeah.
It was funny.
Yeah, it was good.
Mm.
Okay. So we're going to quickly mention our top three Philip Seymour Hoffman performances.
I'm going to have to get him up on IMDb, because otherwise I will miss some. You go first, just while I'm typing in Hoffman.
Okay. My top three. First, number three, Talented Mr. Ripley.
Right.
Which I actually warmed to. I didn't think he was very good at first, but then I kind of saw it again and thought, this is actually a really interesting character. Number two would be The Savages, which I think he's just excellent in.
Mm.
And number one would be Capote.
Right. So. Yeah. I think my number three would probably be something like Magnolia. I really, really like him in. I think he's the best in the cast for that, actually. I think the level of empathy and I know Chris has got the showy role, but that's the one I really, really like him in. I think my number two would probably be, I mean, obviously my number one's Capote, I'll just get that out of the way right now. Yeah. I think my number two would probably be something like, I kind of want to say Charlie Wilson's War, just because he just nails it. And I do think it's really funny. Although Flawless is a very, very, that might get more people watching it now.
I've not seen that, actually. So,
Sagnom.
Oh, really? What lead us pouring?
Lead.
Oh, wow. Okay.
In 99 as well, which was a super year.
Yeah.
And I slate the Oscars as much as anybody else, but they did a really good job nominating the men that year. I mean, that was just, I mean, that's four of my top five right there. Mm. I mean, it's those four, so Denzel, Russell Crowe, Spacey, and Farnsworth, and then Daniel Auteuil in The Girl on the Bridge. That's my five.
So did he knock Farnsworth out for SAG then?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah, and Capote, it's just it's one of those ones like Hopkins and Nixon. It's an impression rather than impersonation.
Yeah, yeah. And having seen him since, like, I hadn't seen Truman Capote on film before Capote, and then having seen him in films from the past, the real Truman Capote, he kind of does get it. He does get the mannerisms, and then he's got that whole emotion behind it in Cold Blood Story.
And that's the difference between something like Toby Jones in Infamous. Toby Jones gets all the mannerisms right, but that's also down to the screenplay as well, because Dan Futterman's screenplay of Capote mines the dramatic potential to its maximum. And you see the same scenes in Infamous, and they just don't go in the same areas, and it's all, you've already seen it done as well as it can be. So it's depressing. Speaking of depressing, the news was coming on the radio on Monday morning, it was actually Sunday night, but we went into work on the Monday morning, and they said the actor Philip Seymour Hoffman has died, and the one guy couldn't quite think of the name, and I said you'll know him. He's been in loads of things, and I said, what did I say? I said Talented Mr. Ripley, Magnolia, and I started to say something else, and my uncle piped up with, you know who he was? He was Dustin in Twister. Oh, him! I was like, oh my god.
Well, yeah, there was a couple of girls on the train on Monday, and he was like, the guy from Hunger Games has died.
Oh god.
So, it just depends, doesn't it?
Can I just, I will just quickly, pimp Love Liza. That's a nice little indie film from 2002, which he is really pretty good in.
Okay.
It's about a guy who's lost his wife, and he's just a general sad sack. Typical Philip Seymour Hoffman role. Following the unexplained suicide of his wife Liza, a web designer turns to gasoline fumes and remote control airplanes while avoiding an inevitable conflict with his mother-in-law. It's not a great film. It's like, it's a 3-star film, but he's pretty good in it.
Okay. All right, Shag, Marry, Kill. We have a few this week.
Yes. I would shag, as in watch again right now. Can I include your ones?
Yeah. Well, you don't want to watch any that you've seen.
Well, no. I would watch again right now The Wall, because I want to.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. I would shag Lone Survivor.
Right. Mm. I would watch every weekend for the rest of my life, even though it isn't as good as Spectacular now, just because I could.
Okay. I would marry Place Beyond the Pines, because I think I'd get more out of it than any
every week other film. For the rest of your life.
Well, I think I'd get more out of it on repeat viewings.
Is this repeat viewing starting at 4 a.m. when you're asleep? You just put it on before you go to bed.
Hey, You're the person that said you'd watch In the Fog every week for the rest of your life. So good luck with that one.
Right. And I would kill Place Beyond Pines.
You can't do that.
It's the worst film there by a distance.
You can't kill it again.
Yes, I can.
You've got to kill one of the ones you saw.
No, of course I can kill it again. It's like any sort of like... It's like Scream. Any good horror film, you have to kill them more than once. And that was a horror.
I guess I'm killing The Wall, although I don't really want to.
Of the others, I would kill Museum Hours, but I don't want to because I don't want to offend you.
Well, that's what you should shag, because you haven't actually seen
it. Yeah,
all.
I should finish it.
All right. Watson Factor?
Ooh, okay. I'll go through them one by one as they're written down here. Learn to Owe, I didn't see. Out of the Furnace, Zoe Saldana is so bad, I'm Saldana-ing her. The performance is so bad that it makes her less attractive to me.
Oh my god.
So
it's
got
a new term.
Saldana-ing Zoe.
You coined a new term.
Short Term 12, I like him. What's her face? I can't remember her name. Brie Larson, but no. And the other girl's Jailbait, no. Anyway, she's a no anyway. Place Beyond the Pines, again, Krakow, Eve Mendes, I didn't see it this week. Museum Hours, no. The Walton, no. Spectacular Now, again, Brie Larson, no. And Shailene.
But better in that right?
No, she's better in Short Term 12. Spectacular Shailene. They try and make her look not great.
Shailene.
You know what? There's no Rocky Horror moment for Shailene, even though you would ordinarily be a yes. But then she's so young, I don't really care. So I'll go with a Watson Factor of 1. Stunning!
Excellent. She'll be happy with that.
Yes, she can sleep easy, even though she just got J.K. Rowling to admit that she got the Harry Potter romance wrong.
Oh, yeah. Which I disagree with, by the way.
FYI.
Why wasn't that in news?
BT dub.
Alright. Short Term 12. No, I can't count that this week. Lone Survivor, I'm leaving to the end. I'm not counting Short Term 12. Place Beyond the Pines, Ryan is being said, dude.
Yes, I thought he might be.
Bradley Cooper's being said, dude.
Yeah.
Emery is...
Oh, is Bradley Cooper being Saldana'd?
What? For
the character.
I thought you said it was the performance.
Oh, that's true. That is true. It's the performance, not the character.
Bradley Cooper is being said, dude, because he's shaven.
Yeah.
Emery Cohen is actually the closest thing to a yes in the film. But it's still a no. And Dane DeHaan is a no.
Yeah.
And the guy, Eva Mendes' husband, is a no.
Hmm.
The Wall.
He chuckles.
Moving on.
Well, you're not including the cow in this one.
The cow was female.
I mean, literally mean the cow and not a... Casting any aspersions onto Fraulein Gadet.
And Lone Survivor, we have
everyone.
Mark Wahlberg is a no. Taylor Kitsch is a yes.
Taylor Kitsch is one of the soldiers. Okay.
Yeah.
What about Ben Foster? Don't say yes.
Ben Foster never looked better, but no.
Yay.
Emile Hirsch has never looked more grown up, but no. We have.
What about the
Eric Bana?
What about the Afghanistani shepherd boy from the trailer?
No, stop it now.
Sorry, this shepherd boy is being naughty. Sorry.
Eric Bana has a groomed beard in this.
In what?
That's a yes.
Eric Bana is in Lone Survivor.
Yeah.
How did they not advertise that?
Mm-hmm. So that's.
So
we've got two.
No.
And then there's this guy called Dan Bilzerian, who is also yes. So that's 4.0 on the range.
Oh,
Lone Survivor. All from Lone Survivor.
Good lord.
Yes. It's there was only one survivor, but there were several beards, so that was good. We have a website. It's moveforpodcast.com. We're on Twitter, Facebook. Twitter, we're at moveforpodcast. Facebook, in the moveforpodcast. We're also on iTunes. The February schedule will be up shortly when we decide what we're going to see. Mm. Next week, we have Labor Day.
You know what? I find it actually does look like a drama, doesn't it?
It looks bad. It looks...
Well, this is a Jason Reitman film. What do you expect?
I don't think he's made a bad film, so... You're... Preconception. But this one, I don't know. I'm sceptical.
Mm.
But Josh Brolin.
Exactly.
We have The Invisible Woman.
Do we?
Out next week. We do.
Why does that ring a bell?
It's Ray Fiennes directing Felicity
Yes,
Jones.
Yes, that's the one. My childhood friend, yes.
Yes. Your fiddling partner.
don't say that. Flute.
Or was it flute?
Flute.
I thought she was violin.
No, there was no fiddling with me and Felicity Jones.
Quick call up the tabloids.
Yeah, I don't...
Are we going to do her next week?
Well, I think we're going to have to, because the only other options are RoboCop and Mr. Peabody and Sherman.
Yeah. There's
unless
also...
Unless we do I, Frankenstein and completely say do Mr. Eckhart.
Or Saldana.
Or, yeah, and then there's always a Zac Efron's raunchy rom-com about three lads struggling with the idea of commitment. Is that Pootsville?
That's Pootsville, yeah.
Miles Teller as well. How have you not seen this already?
Well, also there's nudity involved as well.
Well, who's?
Zach's.
Oh, really?
We also have a Claire Denis film out called Bastards, which I will be seeing.
Is it set in Africa by any chance?
No, it's not.
Does it involve Africans by any chance?
I don't know.
Does it involve the Foreign Legion burning down Isabel Huppert's house? Or
for the sake of coffee. Everything's for the sake of coffee.
While everyone's an immigrant. Is that what 42 Shots of Your Mom's about? I don't know. I haven't seen it.
Oh. So, have you got a jam?
I thought you said job. I was like, shut up, Mom. I've just been listening to older stuff in the car. It would just be more Jezebel songs. Horsehead, Jezebel.
Horsehead? Very mafia. Mm. My jam is Jennifer Nettles, and it's called Falling.
Right. Mm.
It's a bit of country music.
Ah, okay.
A la Jolene. Jolene.
Jolene. You're not ending this on Dolly Parton. And then this is where it cuts and goes straight to Dolly Parton.
Of auburn hair with ivory skin and eyes of emerald green. Your smile is like a breath of spring, your voice is soft like summer rain, and I cannot compete with you, Jolene. He talks about you in his sleep, and there's nothing I can do to keep from crying when he calls your name, Jolene. Understand how you could easily take my man, but you don't know what he means to me, Jolene.